Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Let's talk.
John Brown. The Last Bell, Life, Death, and Boxing takes us on a journey through the past 6 years in boxing from 2018 to 2024. It is a fascinating new book by Donald McCrae, respected journalist writing for The Guardian, amongst others. And I'm delighted to say that Donald joins me live on the line now. Donald, good morning to you.
Morning, Giles. Thank you for having me on.
The pleasure is all mine. For those who don't know you, just explain, give me a quick bit of sort of the Don McCrae 101, as it were.
Okay. I come from South Africa, but I moved to the UK in the 80s. So I'm getting on now. I'm in my early 60s. I've followed boxing for more than 50 years of my life, and I've written about it professionally for almost 30, 35 years.
What's the attraction for boxing? Because for those who love boxing, there is no finer sport. And for those who don't, and you either get boxing or you kind of don't get boxing. There are seemingly sort of no grey areas, are there?
No, there aren't. You know, I think boxing, the thing I love about it is the humanity of the fighters. They are walking a tightrope each time they fight because, you know, without overplaying it, they could lose their lives. You know, they could be maimed, they could be damaged. Some fighters do die. You would ask me, well, how can you continue to follow such a dark business? And I think the answer to that is, you know, for The Guardian, I do the interview of the sports interview of the week. I interview sportsmen and women from all sports, but none have the candor, the pathos, sometimes even the poetic quality of boxers when they come to talk about their lives.
And also there's this link between boxing and writers. I mean, I was reading the brilliant book Night Train about Sonny Liston. Which really got me interested in that period, and it sparked what people call that golden age of Ali and Liston. You know, he was Cassius Clay, of course. But writers have always had, haven't they, had an attraction for boxing. You think of Norman Mailer, you know, misbehaving at the Rumble in the Jungle, that sort of thing. Why do you think that, you know, and Hemingway like to slug out as well? Why do you think there is an attraction between sort of boxing and writing, because you would think they are, you know, oppositely, you know, complete opposites?
Yes, I think it's the elemental nature of boxing. These boxers are facing sort of existential danger. Their lives could be extinguished. They all come from, well, almost all boxers come from impoverishment, from adversity, and boxing enables them to find a way out of those paths where there's not much opportunity. So these life stories are vivid. The danger they face is dramatic. And they are, on the whole, the most accessible people, because you can go to a fighter before a fight, after a fight, and they will talk so openly about their fears, their hopes. And I think the boxing cuts away a lot of the artifice, and then you get to the heart of a person.
The thing is, though, with boxing, there is no sport that lays you so bare as being in the ring. You cannot. It's not like by tennis. You cannot hide. You are there in front of audiences of millions, or even those who've never boxed, the sheer physicality. I know that sounds stupid, but if you're actually at a live boxing event, the visceral sort of gladiatorial aspect of it. That's the stripping down, but the stuff on periphery can drive you mad, Don. You know, all the Don Kings, the undertones, sometimes the corruption. Which belt is which? I mean, we went through all that period, didn't we?
Sure. Well, this is my fifth book about boxing. I've written many other books, but in boxing terms, five have been done by me. My first one was called Dark Trade, which was published in 1996. The title of that book, Dark Trade, would explain that I do look at sort of the darkness of this business. But in those days, I think I was quite sentimental and romantic about boxes. And some of the boxes about the fight game, I would call it the fight game, where it's not a game at all. But we had Don King, who basically had killed a man. He was a known gangster. And yet Don King was a funny man. He would misquote Shakespeare. He would talk on and on and on. And I tended to just laugh along, think, oh, Don King, what a card. However, this book charts boxing from 2018 to 2024. And the business has become darker than ever, one wave after another. We've had more gangster involvement in boxing than ever before. We've had more positive dope tests, which is a good thing, that people are being caught if there's dope in their systems. And then finally, we've had the Saudi Arabian takeover of boxing, and the human rights record of Saudi Arabia, putting it mildly, leaves a lot to be desired. These things have come one after another. And the book is called The Last Bell because I finally came to a point where I thought I will still write about boxing journalistically, but in long form book form, I think this is it.
We could have conversations about the whole Dubai, Bahrain, Irish connection, Tyson Fury, the clans thing, the gunning down at the press conferences, sports washing, we know, all that sort of thing. But again, it is boxing, when it gets down to, when it strips it down, there is still a purity of that. And for, at certain times, and if you think of, Tyson Fury, who seemed to be gone and dusted and yet another casualty of high living, John Conti for the millennial age, if you will, then, however, there is redemption and Fury perhaps backs that up. And obviously sport means something to people on a personal level, as it did to you, Don.
Definitely. And, if we start with Tyson Fury, I have a long, complicated personal history with him. I first interviewed him in 2011. He was a young fighter of 23, just become British champion, didn't have a lot of money. I interviewed him in his modest bungalow with his young wife and their two young kids. He now lives in a palatial place. But in that 2011 interview, Tyson spoke to me so movingly. His bipolar disorder had not been diagnosed. So he said to me, Don, I don't know what's the matter with me. Sometimes I'm so happy, I want to fly. Other times I'm so sad, I want to get in a car and crash into a wall at 100 miles an hour and end it all. He subsequently went on to become heavyweight champion of the world. But within days of that victory, his life spiraled out of control. Drink, drugs took hold of him. And then finally, in 2018, he made a comeback. He had ballooned up to 400 pounds in weight, but he fought beautifully in his comeback world title fight. And for me personally, it's meshed with my own life because I had just lost my sister a few months before. She was my big sister. She died just having turned 60. It was a shock to us. My mother had terminal cancer. My father wasn't well either. So all these things were swirling about in my personal life. And I kind of went back to boxing because I guess it was familiar, and I identified to a certain extent with the fighters, and that's how the book starts.
So when it comes to writing this book, it's not just a book about boxing. It's not just a list of tables and who fought who and getting...
Absolutely not.
Would you say this is perhaps your most personal work then? And from that, you were able to to switch off, as it were, when you were watching boxing, or did it take on another aspect with the bereavements that you suffered?
I think it took on a depth, hopefully, because, you know, when we all have suffered loss in life, we all lose family members. I'm not unique in that sense. And I accepted the death of my family. But, you know, I think it made me look quite carefully at boxing. And I started to distinguish between boxing and the boxing business. Boxing, I was still inspired by, moved by, entranced by. The boxing business, I started to look with a hard, clear gaze, and I started to distinguish between the two. So the book, I think, is this journey for me, in beginning to understand the distinction between the fighters and all the corruption that surrounds them.
And at its heart as well, people say, oh, well, they're just living in a bubble, and what does that matter? These are millionaires punching each other. You know, I would get in the ring and get knocked out by Tyson Fury for X million dollars. But then you have, then we have the war in Ukraine, and we have the Klitschko brothers, who are Namas, and then we have Usyk, of course, who fights for a nation. And, you couldn't script it, but if, for those who think that it's just, you know, millionaires and knocking seven bells at each other, there is something behind that fighter that is more than just ringcraft.
Alexander Usyk, I feel, is the most politically significant fighter since Muhammad Ali. Clearly, Ali had a gravitas about him for all his humor. And in terms of civil rights, you know, Ali changed the world. Alexander Usyk, in a much smaller sphere, because his influence is perhaps limited to Ukraine. But what he means to Ukrainians is huge. And, you know, he said to me, oh, Don, I wish you'd known me many years ago because you would have seen what a funny guy I am. And I said, Alexander, I know that because I've seen his videos in the gym where he'd be doing these crazy dance routines, singing, laughing. But the weight of the war, because he is the most sort of symbolic, positive figure in Ukraine, it wore him down. But the book has a kind of a happy ending. I like Tyson Fury, but I particularly like Alexander Usyk. And the last fight, their first fight sort of is the ending of the book last May, and Usyk won. And to see him afterwards, as he spoke about Ukraine and the meaning for Ukrainians, but also he cried about losing his father. His dad had died about 10 years ago, but he still could feel his presence. So moving. And again, like nothing else, boxers can talk in this way after a battle, you know, like no other.
And the other thing I was going to say, I don't have any water in the studio. The other thing I was going to say was, despite the trash talking, you see how the way that Fury, after that fight, Tyson was actually, the stupidness stopped, and it was just sort of men talking.
Respect.
Yes.
And he was kind of kissing him on the forehead and just hugging him, which is kind of bizarre. You know, they want to knock seven bells out of each other. And then afterwards, and just the other point, although this book covers a lot of bleakness, there's some uplifting moments. The least known fighter in this book is called Isaac Chamberlain. And Isaac, at the age of 11, in South London, he was totally lost. He got co-opted into a gang, and his job at the age of 11 was to deliver drugs, crack and cocaine, on the streets of London on his bicycle. His mother, who'd had him at the age of 17, she decided to take him to a boxing gym. She knew nothing about boxing, but someone said, boxing will help your child. And it did. It gave him a new purpose in life. And he got out of that gang age 12 and decided to become a boxer. So boxing can do so much good, but the business is dirty.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Because, you know, I MC at boxing events down here, and you see, you know, young guys. They're disciplined. They have to be, they're young, you know, we're talking teenagers. They're young, fit guys. They've got the girls, but it is the fact that they have to be disciplined. And you kind of think without that, a lot of them are lost, and a lot of them without the box. And it's a cliche because it's true. And it goes all the way back to the East End gyms and, you know, the New York gyms as well of the 40s and 50s. But the reason it's a cliche is because it is true, Don.
Absolutely. And Isaac explained it to me so clearly, because I was going on, oh, the discipline must have helped you so much. He said, yes, of course it did. But you know what it is? It's the love in boxing. So I kind of paused and I said, what do you mean? He said, when I went into that gym the first time, I saw these older men, how they were encouraging the fighters. They were saying, well done, Joe. Well done, Bill, or whatever their names were. Isaac wanted that because he didn't have a father in his own life. And there was a janitor in the gym who took Isaac under his wing. They would go running at 5 o'clock in the morning. And this man said to Isaac, "You've got talent. You're good. You can get better." Isaac never heard that at school. He never heard that in his family home. So this is where boxing has this redemption. And to hear a fighter explain it so clearly, you know, was a beautiful thing.
What is the moment, if you have one, that you've actually sort of stopped and looked around in a ring, maybe a big event or a one-on-one interview, and the hairs on your neck have gone up and you thought, this is why I do what I do?
There's many, but one that stands out to me actually features women. Katie Taylor from Ireland. You know, we've got to put into context that women were not allowed to box in the UK in 1998. It was still banned. So that's not long ago. And in 2022, I was in Madison Square Gardens where Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier have staged epic battles. And Casey Taylor and Amanda Serrano from Puerto Rico were the headline bill. And the garden was alive because the Puerto Ricans were in full voice. The Irish were in full voice. And these two women honestly fought their hearts out. It was the most incredible, one of the most incredible fights I've seen live. For the last 2 minutes, I looked down the press row, all the journalists were standing up, just lost in this, the valor and the skill of these two women. And that was one moment where I definitely thought, wow, this is like nothing on earth.
The book is called The Last Bell, Life, Death and Boxing. It's by Donald McCrae, who's speaking to today. You can order it, by the way, via our own virtual bookstore, listeners. I urge you to do that. Donald, if people want to follow you and say nice things about you, where's the best place to find you?
Thank you. They can find me on my website, donaldmcrae.com, or on X, Instagram, all the usual social media outlets.
The book is called The Last Bell, Life, Death and Boxing. It's by Donald McCrae, who's speaking to today. Donald, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you, Charles. I've enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.